You were recalled in 1946 to work at Douglas. How did that come about?
They had got a contract for spare parts for the DC-3, the A-26, and then they also had a contract to refurbish some A-26s that were mothballs. Up in Utah, they sent a crew up there and fly them home, pick them up and fly them home, so that they could be reconditioned, and they called back, oh, I don't know, a couple thousand of us to make spare parts. And then we had a contract for 13 cargo planes of some kind, C-113s, I think they were. And we built those, and then the spare parts. And we worked a few months. Didn't take too long. Well, the spare parts and the A-26s we didn't do in 46. I think those were like 47, a lot of part of 47, 48. Because we worked about 4-5 months on these cargo ships. And then there were a lot of us laid off again in 46.
Did you know when you went back initially that it would be for a short time?
We hoped not, but we weren't sure, and we halfway expected it. When I worked at Santa Monica. I went up to Santa Monica and went to work on the DC-6 up there. I worked up there a year. And when I transferred back from there, I was never laid off again.
And were most of the other people that you worked with when you were initially called back, were they people that had worked during the war?
Some of them were. The women were. The men, we started getting GIs back, and we had quite a few hot arguments with the GIs about why the women were working, because most of them would have much more seniority than we, and of course they had a promise from the government and from the company both that when they came home from the war, the jobs were waiting for them. And any of them that had worked for Douglas before they went in the service had a job waiting when they got back. And they came back in and took over, and their seniority had gone on right while they were gone the whole time.
Those years were counted.
Right.
Now, with the time that you put in during the war and after the war counted towards your seniority and your retirement in the war?
It counted toward my seniority, yes. Retirement doesn't amount to much. Mine doesn't. My time went from the time I hired in September 15th, 1943, till I quit January of 1960. I had just less than 18 years. But we had no retirement fund, per se, for the hourly help until just a few years before I quit. And naturally, the first retirement funds weren't set up comparable to anything they've got now. And for my 17 years and 9 months, I draw a great big check of $22.01 a month. Well, that's what it is. They, other ones that are that work, are retiring now with the same amount of time are drawing 20 times that much or more. I mean, they have all kinds of medical, dental, all kinds of disability insurances and things. I have nothing but $22 and one penny. And that's here the first day of the month.
When you went back, did you go back into the same type of work that
yeah.
you had done before?
Right out in the shop. I went back. All my work before, during the war, and after the war, I was classified as a bee assembler. In spite of the fact that during the war, I had taken the responsibilities of a lead job and had done lead personnel work, I was never given a classification. It was very hard for a woman to get an A classification at that time, because the next step from an A was to aircraft mechanic. And heaven knows we would not have a female aircraft mechanic at that time. Well, after the war, the union was in. We had voted it in during the war, and the union was getting stronger, so that when I transferred back from Santa Monica, after a few months, my seniority was comparable to a lot of the GIs that was coming back. And I eventually got my A classification. So when they started making women A assemblers, and then the men would be reclassified and made lead men. Well, this went on for quite a few years. And finally, it got to the point where they had to break down and make a few of the women lead men, too. And the last 10 years I worked there, I had a lead man classification. Same pay, the same work. As the men.
What were the feelings of the women around the staff that they were giving this classification?
We didn't complain too much. We knew that I didn't want to go on. I didn't, I never did really want the responsibility. When you're married and you start thinking about your income taxes and you're having all the raises you got, all my raises went for income tax. I mean, I had people working for me. My assemblers would be drawing, actually taking home more money than me, because mine were all going out for taxes. And the only way I could keep ahead of any of them would be a blanket raise that covered everybody. In spite of the fact that I was making 25 cents an hour more than them, if any of them put in 2 hours overtime, why, they'd take home bigger checks than me. And that was one of the reasons that I finally quit, was because all I was doing was throwing us into a higher tax bracket, and my husband was climbing up his own little ladder, and I was getting a lot of static about I wasn't making hardly enough to pay our taxes. So when I finally left Douglas, that was one of the biggest reasons. And I was tired of it. I was getting to the point where it was a hassle. The supervisory, assistant supervisors and all, they expected more of the women than they did the men. With the seniority I had, I would have 3 weeks paid vacation and a week sick leave coming. I would have to split mine up and take it 2 weeks at a time. The men could take 3 weeks to a month. And assistant supervisor I had would say, you'll cover for him while he's gone. But when I would ask for 3 weeks vacation, the men couldn't cover for me. They couldn't carry the load, but I could carry it. It was very out of proportion, the way they thought.
Did you take that kind of a complaint to the union?
I didn't, because I had lost faith in the union. Like I said, the union got, it was just you couldn't prove it. I mean, you didn't get anything like this in writing. And you could go and quarrel with your assistant supervisor about it, and he would say, well, that's just the way it is. It won't do you any good to go any higher because they'll back him up. And I guess I was just being as stubborn as anybody else, because I wouldn't ask the union to help me. I didn't approve of things, some of the things that the union was doing. I didn't like the way the union had divided itself into its little groups that were running everything. And I had just about made up my mind to quit when my legs began to bother me, and I went out on sick leave and had my first knee surgery. And I was out from a good 6 months or more with that, because he did a lot of rebuilding in my leg and my knee. And when the doctor finally told me he couldn't keep me out of work any longer, I went over and quit. I wouldn't go back. And when I started to go, I filed for my unemployment, Douglas refused it. He said that I had quit because of marital problems at home and things like that, and that wasn't true. That wasn't the reason I gave him. In fact, I didn't give him a reason. I just told him I wasn't working any longer. So they appealed, and there was a hearing, and there again, they wanted to know why I didn't go to the union. I had seen my assistant foreman write these answers for transfers. We'll release when appropriate replacement is found. And I knew he would never give me a release. And the only place I could transfer to was planning, and I didn't want that. I didn't want any. In fact, I was tired of all responsibility down there.
Did you ever change the type of work that you were doing?
Mm-hmm. After I had gone all my unemployment.
I mean, while you were at Douglas.
Oh, no. But after I had finished drawing unemployment, I went to Cerritos and enrolled in a LVN nursing course. Went to school for 48 weeks. And then after I graduated from that, I went to work at Bellwood Hospital in Bellflower and worked for 10 years as a medical surgical nurse on the floor.
What made you decide to go into that?
It feels silly. I took an aptitude test at the state, not called unemployment office, whatever they call it now. And I said, why did you ever work at Douglas? You were wasting your time. You should have been in medicine all this time. And when I worked at Douglas, I had become acquainted with quite a few engineers down there, and they used to try to talk me into going to engineering school. You're wasting your time on the floor. You should be up here in engineering. Which always made me laugh. When I was working at night, afternoon shift for a long time, and they would give us a disposition to repair something, and if something very similar would happen later, and I would call for an engineer to come down for a disposition, he would say, tell me what you did and how you fixed it. And then he would write the disposition for me. And there were half a dozen of them that used to keep saying, why don't you go to, all you have to do is apply to the office and they'll send you to school. I didn't want to go to school anymore. And when I passed the test, I had to take the, the first test before you go to enter the college. And then I had to go back and take another all-day test to see if I was qualified to be a nurse. And I didn't like blood, I didn't like nothing. It didn't make me sick or anything like that, but I had never thought of nursing. But they insisted at the office that I should go over and try to qualify for the nursing class. Well, there were 40 of us entered the class in February, and there were 11 of us finished it. And I trained at Bellwood, and I went right in there and went to work and stayed on for 10 years. And by that time I was 60 years old, and I said, I've had it. That's it.
How did your husband feel about your 10 years old?
Well, when we were first married, he said, give me 5 years until I can get on my feet, and then you can quit work. I worked 17 years. And when I quit Douglas, he left it entirely up to me. I put in many agonizing nights because I could see the cost of living was climbing and climbing, and everything was, even during the 50s and the 60s, you could see it coming. Everything was getting more expensive. And even though hourly paid help was getting more money, he was unsalaried. And salaried help, they don't climb that fast. And it was hard, even with two checks, at that time making ends meet. We were buying a home, we were buying a car, we were buying furniture. And it just seemed like it took every dime we made. We couldn't save money, we couldn't do anything. Because we didn't appreciate going into debt for everything. We didn't have a lot of charge accounts and things like that. Tried to pay cash for most everything, tried to keep out of debt, and we would see our friends, they'd have houses furnished much nicer than ours, always buying new cars, and we couldn't figure out how they were doing it because a lot of our friends worked where he worked, and he knew what they were making. And we just couldn't understand how they were doing it, but they were in debt way over their heads, where we were trying to keep our heads above water. But he left it entirely up to me, and when I told him I was going to school to be a steady nurse, and he Go ahead if you want to. It's up to you. And he didn't think I'd ever finish it. And it was a rough go. I went to the hospital at 7 in the morning. And we worked on the floor of clinical work until noon. We had lunch, and then we went to the college, and we went to school from 1 until 3:30. Two lectures every afternoon. And you'd go home, and you would study, and you'd try to transcribe your notes, try to read what you'd written. And I had been out of school for 30 years. I was like 47. I hadn't studied anything in so long, and it was hard. I couldn't even stay awake while I lectured. I couldn't sleep. It was during the summer months, especially. I just couldn't stay awake. Mm-hmm. And I finally got a schedule worked out where I would be up at 4 o'clock in the morning and study from 4 until time to eat, get breakfast, go to work, and go to the hospital. I'd work from the time I got home until Rob got home from school. And then I would get dinner, and he and Armin would do the dishes and straighten up the kitchen while I tried to study. And we had remodeled our garage, paneled it in and put a tile floor on it. And I had a desk, my typewriter, and everything out in the garage, and I'd go out in the garage and study. It's the only place I could be where it was quiet. And they did the biggest share of the housework and everything but the shopping and the laundry while I went to school. And they continued doing a lot of it while I worked the last 10 years. And it was amazing. After I got started in the hospital, I loved it. I got the biggest, I think one of the biggest thrills of my life was to take care of somebody and have them get up out of a sick bed and go home. And when I lost the patient, I lost part of me. That was agonizing. But I did love my work over there. And I was sorry to quit work, but my legs and hands had gotten so bad with arthritis that I just couldn't keep it up any longer. And now that I'm out of it, and have been out of it for 8 years, you couldn't get me back in it. That's a complete change of heart all the way. And in the meantime, when Rob was a boy growing up, anything I said about the hospital, I'd come home and I'd talk about one of my patients, and it would almost make him sick. And in his third year in college, he changed his major to microbiology, microchemistry. I went into lab work, which was a total change for him. He couldn't even catch a spider or kill a fly when he was growing up. And now he is absolutely terrific in the lab. And I have to have blood work done, that's where I go.
Social
things
did you
do
during all those years?
Oh, after Armin and I were married, we had accumulated quite a few friends. We had, there were many house parties. We played a lot of cards, dancing, Of course, the drive-in theaters are coming and taking quite a few movies. PTA and stuff like that was out. I'd served my time with the other four. I wasn't about to go back to school for that. And I did not get involved with Cub Scouts or anything like that when Rob was in it. That was just too much. And we didn't even take vacation. We both of us just worked steady. Well, I took vacation. Diamond didn't. He didn't take a vacation for 6 or 7 years. I would take mine, especially save mine up and take it over the holidays so I could be at home with Rob. And then 1 year we took a vacation. And we took Rob and we went to the East Coast. And we were in Washington. We saw busloads of people, elderly women, and very few men. And my husband said, "That is it. We are taking a vacation every year. From now on, I am going to see all these things that we want to see, and we'll see them together." Because I would not travel alone, and I would not go on bus tours. And he said, "I want to see all these things too." So since then, we have taken a vacation every year, and we have traveled quite a bit. I think we started in 64, and we have been pretty much all over the United States, up into Canada. And then in 70, we took our first trip to Europe. And we've been back 7 times. The last 2 years, we have gone on cruises, which have been fantastic. Now our social life has slowed down tremendously because 2 years ago he was sick. He had a heart attack, and thank God we found a good cardiologist and a good cardiac surgeon, and we did a follow-up.